That was a great week for administration presentations, wasn't it? Monday we had the president explaining why it was so important to dump another $1 trillion of debt on our posterity. And then Tuesday, our new Secretary of the Treasury took a break from not paying his taxes to tell us about the plans he has for developing plans to fix the banking system. Thanks to the Bristol-Myers Squibb Company and their wonderful product, NoDoze, I was able to monitor both presentations, and I shall be bringing you full reports. Lots of other stuff has been happening too, so over to the Radio Derb newsroom for all the latest, beginning with the outrage of the week. Thursday, February 11th, was a day that should live in infamy. This was the latest, most shameful and horrifying episode in the saga of Dutch parliamentarian Geert Wilders, which Radio Derb brought to your attention 2 weeks ago. Let me just use this segment to give you a recap before I talk about Thursday's events. Geert Wilders is leader of a party that holds 9 seats in the 150-seat Dutch lower house. That ranks Wilders' party 5th of the 10 parties with representatives in the lower house. Wilders' party got 1 in every 7 votes cast in the 2006 elections, a total of nearly 1.5 million votes out of nearly 10 million cast. I'm telling you, this is not some bizarre figure from the lunatic fringe of Dutch politics. This is a mainstream politician leading an important and popular party. However, last year Mr. Wilders lent his name to a short movie titled Fitna. F-I-T-N-A, Fitna. That's the Arabic word for something like discord, I think. You can watch Fitna on the internet. I just did. You go to the Wikipedia entry for Fitna, the movie, and there are a couple of links right there. The film is only 16 minutes long. It intersperses readings from the Quran with scenes of inflammatory Muslim preachers and acts of violence committed by radical Muslims. The film is well produced and it makes its case with force, the case being that Islam is inherently violent, aggressive and intolerant. Whether that's actually true or not, as a free, reasoning citizen, you can decide for yourself. There are plenty of links to counter-Fitna commentary on that same Wikipedia page. Weigh the evidence and make up your mind. That's what free citizens of free nations should do. Peoples who have no tradition of liberty don't understand this. We now know that some of them go on not understanding it, even after years of living in civilized countries. Muslims in the Netherlands called for Mr. Wilders to be prosecuted for insulting their religion, even though his movie merely quotes from its holy book. The public prosecutor of the Netherlands turned them down, but the Muslims persisted. At last, the great universal rule of a multiculturalist society triumphed. That is the rule that legal proceedings aren't over until the minority plaintiff wins. Now Mr. Wilders has been indicted on charges of, quote, inciting hatred and discrimination. Whether the 1.5 million Dutchmen who voted for him are also to be indicted as co-conspirators, I can't tell you. Wilders has been under 24-hour protection by the Dutch police for the last 5 years because of countless death threats against him from outraged Muslims. Well now, this latest kerfuffle started 3 weeks ago when Geert Wilders was invited to a showing of his movie at Britain's Houses of Parliament on January 29th. That got British Muslims fired up. Most especially fired up was Nasir Ahmed, a Pakistan-born professional agitator who was appointed to a seat in the House of Lords 10 years ago by the appalling Tony Blair, for his services to multiculturalism and, you know, community organising, that sort of thing. Nasir Ahmed threatened to mobilise 10,000 Muslims to prevent Mr. Wilders from entering the Houses of Parliament. Wilders' visit was postponed, and Ahmed boasted to the newspapers in Pakistan that the postponement was, quote, a victory for the Muslim community. Well, that got Malcolm Pearson's dander up. Pearson is a Conservative member of the House of Lords, and he got Mr. Wilders' invitation reinstated, with a new date of February 12th for the visit and the movie showing. That was too much for Britain's socialist government. The Home Secretary, that's roughly the equivalent of Attorney General, wrote a letter to Mr. Wilders telling him he wasn't welcome in Britain and would be arrested if he tried to enter the country. Well, on Thursday, Wilders did try to enter Britain, flying to London Heathrow from Amsterdam. He was refused entry to Britain and put on a plane back to the Netherlands. The parliamentary showing of Fitna went ahead anyway, with about 30 British parliamentarians attending. The BBC correspondent present said they gave a round of applause when the movie finished. The culprits here are the weasels of Britain's governing Labour Party, multicultural socialists who detest and despise their own nation, culture and ancestors, and who want as many foreigners as possible in Britain so that Britishness can be stamped out once and for all, sparing the world any recurrence of British imperialism and colonialism, which, as everybody knows, were the most evil developments ever to occur in the entire history of the human race. Please note what the issue is here. It's not the right of a country to exclude undesirable people. Nobody can have any argument with that. In the past, for example, Britain has excluded Louis Farrakhan, in my opinion, justifiably. Nor is it even really an issue of free speech. Britain has never had any constitutional guarantee of free speech. When I was growing up there, a stage play couldn't be performed until it had been approved by the Lord Chancellor. The issue is a British government of British people with British ancestors yielding cravenly to foreign agitators, people who hate Britain and whose religious beliefs can't be squared with British values, yet whom Britain, for reasons unfathomable to me, has permitted to settle in huge numbers. The lesson of the Geert Wilders affair is not that a nation should admit anyone who wants to enter. It's more like the opposite, in fact. Nor is it even that civilized standards are impossible unless everyone can say what he likes in public. The lesson is that in a multicultural society, the most ruthless and violent culture will end up getting its way every time. Shame on Britain. Shame on the cowards and weasels of Britain's Labour Party for not standing up to the Muslim bullies. Shame on the British people for letting things reach this sorry pass, when they've been warned for 40 years and more what would happen if they opened their country to unlimited settlement by people from cultures that have nothing in common with their own. And shame on us if we are such cowards and fools as to give away our country the way the British have given away theirs. Our new president gave his first news conference this week. As always with Obama, it helps to separate out the form from the content. Form-wise, the president was eloquent, persuasive, charming and witty. If the community organizing thing hadn't worked out, Obama would have had a great career in sales. We all know, however, that when confronted with a truly superb and gifted salesman, you want to take a really, really careful look at the product. So let's take a look. what did the president have to tell us about the product? That is, about the stimulus package that he's pushing through Congress. Well, he told us that the plan will create or save 4 million jobs. What kind of jobs? Quote, jobs doing the work that America desperately needs done. Jobs rebuilding our crumbling roads and bridges, repairing our dangerously deficient dams and levees so that we don't face another Katrina. There'll be jobs building the wind turbines and solar panels and fuel-efficient cars that will lower our dependence on foreign oil, and modernizing our costly healthcare system that will save us billions of dollars and countless lives. There'll be jobs creating the 21st century classrooms, libraries, and labs for millions of children across America. And there'll be the jobs of firefighters and teachers and police officers that would otherwise be eliminated if we do not provide states with some relief. End quote. So, we're talking about laying asphalt and pouring concrete. And then some factory-type jobs assembling turbines and cars. Then some jobs writing computer systems, for which no doubt Bill Gates will be allowed to import a couple of million foreigners on H-1B visas, which is how most of that kind of work is done nowadays. And then a lot of jobs in school construction. Boy, construction workers are making out like gangbusters here, aren't they? And then we're going to save the jobs of municipal workers like cops and teachers. The very workers whose gold-plated retirement, disability and pension schemes are already crippling our public sector finances at state and municipal levels. That's terrific, Mr. President. Now, here's a 45-year-old guy who just got laid off from his job as a middle manager in one of our retail chains. Have you got a new job for him? He's a bit past the age when he'd be much use on a construction site, and he's actually past the retirement age for a lot of those gold-plated municipal jobs you want to save. Do you have a job for him, Mr. President? Mr. President? Mr. President? There was some good news from that press conference, though. President Obama told us he's determined not to repeat the mistakes of the George W. Bush administration. Quote, what I won't do is return to the failed theories of the last 8 years that got us into this fix in the first place, because those theories have been tested and they have failed. End quote. Well, that's great news. No more Bush-type policies, eh? So there'll be no more reckless spending, no more bloating of the deficit, no more failure to veto obnoxious legislation. What was Bush's final score there? 12 vetoes in 8 years, was it? No more vast new entitlement programs. No more allowing uneducated foreigners to flood into the country in millions to displace American workers and burden our health and welfare systems and schools. No more stationing of American troops by the tens of thousands in places like Germany and Korea, which ought to be able to defend themselves. No more urging banks to relax lending standards to increase minority home ownership. No more 10-year wars in no-account Dust Bowl countries with goat and donkey economies. No more loading our children and grandchildren up with debt obligations to China and Japan to maintain an illusion of prosperity. Well, this is really great news. I'm starting to like this Obama fellow. If that's the way he's going, we may have a conservative president again after 20 years. The president warned us that if we delay our actions now, we'll enter a negative spiral. Quote, we saw this happen in Japan in the 1990s, when they did not act boldly and swiftly enough, and as a consequence they suffered what was called the lost decade, where essentially for the entire 90s they did not see any significant economic growth, end quote. Huh. Actually, Japan averaged between 1% and 2% growth through the 90s. If the USA manages that across the next decade, Americans will be dancing in the streets and putting up 20-foot statues to Obama in public places. But, of course, nobody in this country wants to live like the wretched Japanese. I mean, just look at their appalling statistics compared with ours. Life expectancy, 82 years, compared with our, 78. Let's try infant mortality. Theirs is 2.8 per thousand. Ours is 6.3. The murder rate, perhaps? Ours is 43 per 100,000. Theirs is 5. Darn it. Unemployment? They've got 4.2% and we've got 7.2%. And this is getting embarrassing. Oh, here you go. GDP per capita, 35,300 for them, 48,000 for us. You see, we're richer than they are. Well, some of us are. The Gini coefficient, which is the standard measure of wealth inequality, is 45 for us, which is high, but 38 for them. Now the heck with it. I bet life in Japan is really boring. The president took on some of the objections raised to his plan. Quote, the suggestion is, why should the federal government be involved in school construction? Well, I visited a school down in South Carolina that was built in the 1850s. End quote. Isn't that supposed to be some kind of scandal? Where I come from, that would be a pretty new school. The toniest and most expensive English schools are the oldest ones, often with some of their original buildings intact. Eton goes back to the 15th century, Winchester to the 14th. King's School Canterbury goes all the way back to St. Augustine of Canterbury in the 6th century. 1850? I bet the paint isn't even dry. All right, what about the mortgage finance disaster? A quote from the president. What got us into this mess initially were banks taking exorbitant, wild risks with other people's monies based on shaky assets. End quote. Now that is certainly true, but you know, bankers are proverbially cautious types. What made them behave so recklessly? One big factor was that a bank that didn't behave recklessly, lending money to people who had very little prospect of paying it back, was going to be threatened with lawsuits against them if they didn't behave recklessly. There was, for example, the 1995 lawsuit brought by Robertson, Robertson and Brooks on behalf of themselves and others similarly situated, it says in the lawsuit, against Citibank, claiming that the bank had denied mortgages to minority applicants. Plaintiff Robertson was an Acorn activist, and one of the plaintiff attorneys on that case was a young chap named Barack Obama. Speaking of St. Augustine, but the other St. Augustine now, the African one, wasn't he the chap that prayed to God to give him chastity and continence, but not yet? It sure was. Trust me. What's that you say? You want it in Latin? Glad to oblige. Da mihi castitatem et continentiam, sed noli modo. Well, it seems that our new president is offering up some similar prayer. Quote, once the economy stabilizes and people are less fearful, then I do think that we're going to have to start thinking about how do we operate more prudently, end quote. Translation, we're going to have fun with a total spendorama in my first term, But in my second term, we'll practice fiscal restraint, I promise. You see, the president wants to be a good fiscal restraint sort of guy. But not yet, said Noli Modo. Now, are we going to get any details on short-term fiscal policy? Oh, yeah. Quote, tomorrow, my Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner, will be announcing some very clear and specific plans for how we're going to start loosening up credit once again. Well, that's great. Now, I suppose that will be Tim Tax Evader Geithner. So after the President's press conference, we were all on tenterhooks to hear what Mr. Geithner had to say. Other than apologies for not having paid his taxes. What are tenterhooks, anyway? So along came Tuesday, and up stepped Tim Geithner, the guy who got a job running the IRS to squeeze taxes out of the rest of us after not paying his own. The speech by non-taxpayer Geithner was, by well-nigh unanimous agreement, a total flopperoo. Those very clear and specific plans he was going to announce? Quote, the president has asked his economic team to come together with a comprehensive plan to address the housing crisis. We will announce the details of this plan in the next few weeks. Eh? That wasn't very clear and specific, was it? Perhaps this is more of the St. Augustine strategy. Lord, make me clear and specific, but not yet. No, I'm not going to do that in Latin. Forget it. Well, here's another gem from 1040 Cooker Geithner's speech. Quote, we are consulting closely with Chairman Chris Dodd in the Senate, Chairman Barney Frank in the House, and their colleagues on both sides of the aisle on the broad outline of a comprehensive program of reforms. Oh, that's all right then. Chris Dodd and Barney Frank. Oh, we'll have the thing straightened out in no time. Are you reassured now, listeners? It didn't help a bit that, in addition to being a guy who skips paying his income taxes, Geithner is only 14 years old and suffers badly from stage fright. As he stared glassily into the cameras and mumbled his lines from the government teleprompter, paid for by taxes of citizens who filled out their returns honestly, the markets nosedived, traders screamed sell orders into their telephones, and fund managers on four continents leapt from high windows. Quote, investors and banks took risks they did not understand, said tax scofflaw Geithner, explaining to us how we got where we are. Yes, they did. And I have a sinking feeling that Barack Obama took on a risk he did not understand when he hired you, pal, even after you admitted to not having paid your income taxes. Well, those were the big-ticket items, listeners. Here's a quick roundup of the rest of the news. Item. Octomom. Come on, sing along with Derb. All you Married with Children fans know the tune already. Who's the gal who pushed out eight? Boom, 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 boom. Did it all without a mate? Boom, boom. Boom. Expenses paid for by the state. Boom, boom. Octomom. 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 Item. Britain's Prince Harry is in hot water again. You may recall that last month a London newspaper got hold of a 2-year-old video of Harry joshing around with army colleagues, calling one of them a Paki, that's British for a Pakistani, and telling another one with camouflage net on his helmet that he looked like a raghead, which presumably means a camel jockey. Well, now a black British comedian has told the world that Harry once said to him, quote, "You don't sound like a black chap." The British nation was so shocked by this outrageous hate speech, they all lost consciousness for a while. Now they have been revived, and Prince Harry is being hustled off to a re-education camp. Actually, an army equality and diversity course, before he comes out in favour of restoring the slave trade. Item, in fact, there's been quite a rash of hate speech in Britain recently. Carol Thatcher, daughter of Margaret Thatcher, whom God preserve, was sitting around in the green room chatting informally with colleagues after recording a TV programme she worked on, when she offered the opinion that the French tennis player, Joe Wilfried Tsonga, who has a white French mother and a black African father, reminded her of a gollywog. One of the colleagues snitched on Carol to management. Management asked Carol to apologise. Carol, in true Thatcher spirit, refused, and so the BBC fired her. A gollywog, perhaps I should explain to you benighted colonials, a gollywog is a little black doll with black fuzzy hair, very popular when I was a child, which was about the same time that Carol Thatcher was. Obviously, the socialists who run Britain are not going to tolerate this kind of speech. They will do everything they can to stamp it out, to keep the country safe for people who want to set off bombs in subway cars. Item, they had an election in Israel. Israel has one of those dumb proportional representation electoral systems, so that you can never tell who's won an election. The two big conservative parties did well, but neither got a clear victory. Now the kingmaker looks like being Avi Lieberman, who leads an even more conservative party. He wants to make Israeli Arabs swear a loyalty oath or face expulsion. Lieberman's party is rising, though, like Geert Wilders' party and ethno-nationalist parties everywhere in the democratic world. They went from 11 seats in the Israeli parliament to 15. Now, after a bit of horse trading, Israel will have a government of some kind. Probably not one the Obama administration will like. Item. Segueing off from that, here's another Israeli item, sort of. My morning newspaper is the New York Post, and I've got to say I love my New York Post. It's a real class newspaper that can always be depended on to keep things in proportion. Here we all are, fretting and arguing and bickering about the president's stimulus plan, and there was I, at breakfast on Wednesday, taking my New York Post out of the red plastic bag it arrives in and looking at the front page. Headline: At Last, a Real Stimulus. The accompanying picture shows an exceptionally well-formed young lady in a bikini whose total surface area was about the size of a couple of fortune cookie slips. Talk about keeping things in proportion. I must say this young lady has kept herself in well-nigh perfect proportion. Subheading: Inside Sports Illustrated's Swimsuit Edition. There's a tasteful caption on that picture too. Quote, Israeli bombshell Bar Raffaelli gives new meaning to Mideast peace. That's P-I-E-C-E, in the new Sports Illustrated, end quote. Now that's my New York Post. And you see, I told you there was an Israeli angle. When it comes to the news you really want to know, the New York Post is the best. The best. Item. It's a statistical certainty that some of you out there in listener land have lost your jobs. Well, not to worry. Losing your job is a blessing, says the Bishop of London. Quote, one of the great implications of this turbulence for us is to reboot our sense of what a truly flourishing human life consists of. Right. Well, thanks for that, Your Grace. Have there been many layoffs among the clergy, I wonder? Anyway, all you newly unemployed Radio Derb listeners, take a hint from the bishop and look on the bright side. You just have to reboot your life. It's simple, you see. Of course, first you have to find the Control-Alt-Delete keys. Item. One has a new website. Yes, Her Majesty Elizabeth II, Dei Gratia Regina et Indiae Imperator Fidei Defensor, etc., etc., Head of State of the British Nation and Commonwealth, has upgraded her website, which you will find at www.royal.gov.uk. Log in to Her Majesty's spiffy new website for interesting historical tidbits, news of royal events, transcripts of Juggier's conversations with his houseplants, and video clips of Prince Harry insulting coloured people. Item. Chinese New Year came and went, and we survived it pretty well. Not so the 30-story Mandarin Oriental Hotel in central Peking, which was totally burned out on the last day of the holiday. Apparently the fire was started when employees of China Central TV staged a huge firework display nearby. The $700 million Mandarin Oriental building was not quite complete, so the sprinkler system wasn't turned on. In a proper spirit of contrition, the CCTV employees responsible for the fire have agreed to donate major organs to a state organ bank, after which they will take up new assignments at a salt mining complex in Inner Mongolia. Item. Finally, one more snippet of news from Asia. A Hindu nationalist group in, of course, India, is developing a new brand of cola made from cow's urine. They're hoping to launch their product by the end of this year. They claim this new drink will cure cancer. Possibly so, but you have to ask yourself which is worse, dying from cancer or living on a diet of cow's urine. Anyway, if you happen to be visiting India and you find yourself accosted in a shopping mall by some bright young fellow asking if you want to take the PP challenge, my advice would be to get the heck out of there. And that is the end of the moos. Yes, folks, another week of madness and mayhem here on Planet Obama. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have to break off here and just go reread Wednesday's New York Post one more time. I don't feel I've really mastered all of its news content yet. After that, my next-door neighbour, Mr. Victananda, has asked me to go over and sample a couple of bottles of this new soda that his relatives back in Calcutta have sent him. I'm looking forward to that. Then it'll be back to scouring the world for more news stories to bring you on Radio Derb. Take it away, Franz Josef.